Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
My interview today is with Isaac Julian. He's an artist, and Dr. Sarah Diamond from OCAD University here in Toronto. And we were talking about a whole lot of things. We were talking about installation art. We were talking about things like porous institutions and about aesthetic tools and about Indigenous voices and about complex new media projects and a whole lot of really interesting things. But what we really got together today to talk about was the global experience project, something that's going on with young contemporary artists at OCAD. I think you're going to want to pay close attention to this interview. There's a lot going on, and I think this is a conversation that is touching on some pretty interesting and some pretty hard-hitting issues. So stay tuned for the interview coming up with Isaac Julian and Dr. Sarah Diamond. And don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my own podcasting, my writing, and my speaking. And of course, rabble.ca. You can also support what I'm doing here at Face to Face through patreon.com. And stay tuned for a very interesting conversation about everything that's poetic and lyrical. How's that as a way into our conversation with Dr. Sarah Diamond and Isaac Julian? Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two special guests here this morning in Toronto on the day that it's supposed to snow. It sure doesn't look like that when I'm looking out the window right now, but Isaac Julian is here with us and Dr. Sarah Diamond. Thank you both for joining me today.
Oh, thank you.
Very happy to be here.
So we're on Richmond Street. We're in Toronto. We've just, before the microphone, before the tape recorder was turned on, you were talking a little bit about OCAD and about realist. Dr. Diamond, tell us about yourself a little bit and where we're at and why is it that OCAD is slowly taking over the city of Toronto?
Well, we're on Richmond Street West and we're in my office. So we're looking north and we can see our very iconic Sharp Center for Design. Designed by the British architect Will Alsop. And so that's where our campus starts at Dundas and McCall. And we wind down McCall Street. We've got a number of buildings there, hop over to Richmond and Duncan. And then we will be soon within the Mervish Gary building when it opens on King Street West. And in 2018, we're opening the beginning of a campus on the Toronto waterfront. So, you know, it's an urban campus. It's a university that's very much about the experience of place, whether it's Indigenous place or whether it's about the ways that artists and designers work with context. And so our strategy, in part because of the reality of real estate, you know, in Toronto, has been to occupy spaces where our students can have a lot of integration with the urban fabric of the city. We're a very porous institution. We love to engage with cultures, with both art and design making, and we have a phenomenal research capacity that also is very much about whether it's art for social change, understanding the kind of historical and critical contexts of the global world that we're in the incredibly diversity of Toronto, or the other piece of the work that we've expanded into is next generation technologies, digital, you know, cultural analytics, lots of work on the STEM, STEAM plus D side, all of which has an integration and is another reason to spread out.
From a real estate perspective, it kind of sounds like an art installation project in and of itself. Would you agree with that, Isaac?
Oh, it sounds absolutely wonderful. And I think there's a way in which what OCAT is doing is really, well, they're leading the way, I think, in terms of art education, in terms of the development of art culturally, which is, of course, now a global cultural industry. And in a way, you have to be able to train young people to be able to take that on, you know, because it's very exciting and expanding phenomena.
Why are you here today with us, Isaac? I want to hear a little bit about your work, installation artist, filmmaker. I've read quite a bit about you now. There's a lot of ways we could go. I'm sure you might even want to comment on the notion of OCAD being a porous institution. I bet thoughts are bubbling to the surface. It's a lovely phrase, by the way. I maybe dig into that a little bit.
Well, I guess you could say that my practice has been rather porous in terms of different approaches to both filmmaking, to thinking about the way that filmmaking originated in the cinema and then transformed really into the gallery setting, and that transformation really taking place because of the way in which new technologies transformed the way I was working. And so I think there's a way in which we can see, even in my own work, this development, and this development really occurred because of the way that new technologies changed the way we looked at moving images.
Do you think, Isaac, do you think it's the technology that drew you to the context or the voice or the platform, or was it your desire to say a particular thing or to communicate a particular thing and you chose what was ready to hand?
Well, I think that I began making works because there was the desire to see oneself in an image. And then I think that transformed into the possibility to be able to create different images that would be doing something unusual and interesting. And so I think the two things coalesced, and that's perhaps why I went from a filmmaker to an installation artist.
I think one of the reasons why Isaac's work is so important historically, and we've known each other for a couple of decades, actually two to be
precise. Oh, nice. Goes way
so
back.
I've had a chance to watch the evolution, but one of the reasons the work's so important and so important for our students is that, you know, you have this ability to touch on very hard-hitting issues that are of global impact. I mean, whether it's the North and the nature of, you know, our imaginary about the Arctic and then the realities in this context of climate change and discovery and, you know, the invisibility of issues of race and looking at the terrible diaspora that's happening because of global warfare. But you do this, and you do this in a way that is elegiac. There's always a level of, you know, the fantastic, the imaginary, the choreographic. So that amazing ability to manage between what could be hard documentary realism and, you know, this phenomenal, fictional, very beautiful world of the image that flows and reminds us and penetrates into our minds in a way where we actually care about these questions in a way that sometimes documentary doesn't allow. I mean, I think that approach, that capacity is incredibly important. And, you know, what I've observed is that with young people today, like our students, they're very concerned about the world. And they don't always have the aesthetic tools to manage these issues in ways that can engage broad audiences and allow a sense of possibility and optimism. So I'm seeing a kind of reversion to, you know, kind of very simplistic documentary methods. And both Isaac and I come out of a kind of critique of that practice. And so this moment of having you here is particularly poignant, I think.
Sarah, you don't talk like a president of a university or of somebody who has a PhD in, correct me if I'm wrong here, computing, information technology, and engineering.
Yeah.
What happened? Where did you go so wrong?
Well, I started out as a social historian, and I became a media artist because I felt that using kind of traditional means of communication wasn't effective in speaking to the people about whom I was making history. So, you know, there's now an Indigenous saying, nothing about us without us. But that's been a kind of principle of certain kinds of history making for many decades. In fact, kind of came out of British social history framework. And so I kind of fell into doing media-based work. And then some of that became autobiographical as well. Through that process, I just, like many artists do, I just tinkered and picked up a whole set of skills, which had to do at some point with computation. And then I moved to the Banff Center, and I was leading the whole big area of new media research and media art and visual art. And I felt that I needed to understand what it was to make very complex new media projects. So I had something I wanted to do, and it turned out that to make it, I needed to build some software. And so in that way that artists do, and Isaac is nodding his head in agreement because he knows exactly what I'm talking about, yeah. I learned how to architect software systems. And then at a certain point in time, I thought, well, I'm getting older here, and I need to really exercise my brain. So I went back to school and did a PhD, where I was able to reverse engineer, you know, what I learned empirically. And and it was in the field of now what's called machine learning, AI, neural networks. So I find myself in this funny moment where there's a lot of discourse around that whole space, and it's quite mystifying.
So I'm wondering when you're going to start turning your eyes towards science fiction writing, because it sounds like we've got a real interesting mix going on here, and you might be ready for it by the sounds of it.
Well, you know, I feel like the whole project of Oakhead University is science fiction writing. I mean, you talked about it as an art installation. When I started my presidency, which is now 12 years ago, I actually described it. And I described my work at the Banff Center, that I approached it as being a conceptual artist. You know, that it was like, how do you have a vision? What tools do you need? How do you find the right tools? You know, how do you work with the people? How is it meaningful? So I still have a bit of that, even though, you know, I've become more of a pragmatist, and years later, right?
So just Sarah's amazing, really. I mean, it's absolutely amazing to have someone like Sarah, you know, head OCAT into this future, and the way that you've been able to, you know, in a way, almost make an artwork out of what you're doing. It's absolutely astonishing, and I mean, it's very exciting, very exciting.
Well, quite a blend of the mathematics of technology, I would think, with the art of it, which is really interesting. You know, to refer to OCAD as a porous institution. I mean, I think we could do a whole interview just on that alone. I think it's fascinating.
Well, it's important to understand the demographics of our students, and that'll be something that Isaac can also come back to and talk about. You know, within his work. But we have a phenomenally diverse student population. The majority of our students are racialized. We have a significant number of Indigenous students. Part of that is the nature of the GTA and part of the Toronto area.
Sure.
And, you know, part of that is very intentional, as increasingly as we move to try and really build that cosmopolitan campus that's both Ontario, but also we have a significant number of international students, some of whom are working with Isaac, and I believe an Indigenous student is also part of the Global Experience Project. So that porosity is of a human nature, but it's also, you know, a way of saying, let's not be inward-looking as an art and design school, even though that tradition of the studio is very much about, you know, self-discovery and self-exploration and some of that is real
right.
and valuable, but it can become very narcissistic when it's placed outside of the context of contemporary life. So we really do believe, and we just went through a vision and mission process, and what was remarkable is the way that, you know, there was this deep sense of sightedness and need to engage across our faculty and students.
It's fantastic.
And the
it
entire
really
institution.
Is.
And I don't think OCAD was there 15 years ago. I think it's made that turn for lots of reasons, and it's not just me. It's you know, and it's also a design school as well as an art school, so designers tend to be, you know, the receptor-focused and think about that artist maybe historically less so, although I would say that's something that's changed significantly in the way artists work. And Isaac, again, would be an exemplar of that ability to think about, you know, like, again, going back 20 years and then consistently, like, who are your audiences? And you were part of that whole movement of black arts in the UK that shifted the nature of who was being addressed, who had the right to be addressed in a gallery. Right?
Isaac, I've read that you're a frustrated painter. what is that? What drove you to? Would you say that was one of the reasons that drove you more towards technology, more towards the image, more towards the moving image and the installation sort of aspect of the work that you, artful work that you do?
Well, you know, I think I was a typical art student. And
you were a difficult art student.
Typical and
typical.
Typical art student.
Yes, let's be clear about that. Maybe difficult, but clearly typical.
Well, you know, I mean, I studied painting, but of course, you don't. When you graduate, when I graduated, which is quite a long time ago, doing painting, well, that wasn't very cool. Much, much, much more cool to actually make films and to make works which would somehow communicate to the world. And of course, what happened really was that, I guess 15 years later, because of the advent of new technologies, it became so interesting to be able to make multiple screen works and all of the languages which were developing through new technologies in a way became the kind of raison d'etre for making works in a gallery context, because in a way I was really interested in creating new audiences. And so that's been something that's been at the forefront of my work, making works for audiences which weren't really being viewed as an audience as such. And then once that felt it was established to a certain extent, to think about new audiences and a new generation of people who might look at your work in the future.
So are you talking about more like the my kids, for instance, like a younger generation? Or are you talking about a different art, a different approach to the experience itself, and say, well, you know, paintings don't really speak to me, but maybe an installation piece might.
Precisely, yes. I think there's really the idea of sort of being able to encapsulate questions which might be quite, in a way, framed in a rather what I would call old-fashioned language and wouldn't be able to attract a younger audience or an audience that might want to view things or be pushed to view things in a different manner. So if I take, for example, a work like Western Union Small Boats, it's a work which was made in 2007, which is shown at the ROM 10 years ago, and it's addressing these questions of migration, the movements of people from North Africa to Southern Europe. And of course, this is now quite commonplace as a media event, but when I made it 10 years ago, I mean, this was not something that people were really interested in terms of the media generally. And so, but making the work, I was able to think about the form. And Sarah and I met around these questions of approaches to documentary filmmaking. And my work was always much more poetic or lyrical in the approach to these questions. And I think that was because I wanted to create empathy with identification, with subjects, which might be quite difficult for people to identify with. And so you have to move beyond the kind of more informational mode of presenting these sorts of questions.
Is this the kind of thing that you're trying to do? And this question is for both of you, for sure. With the Global Experience Project, would you say this idea of you know, the form versus content, having people asking new questions in new ways, in different ways? You know, when you mentioned the empathy, I thought of, you know, maybe one of your installations might actually create emotion of anger in me. I might be upset about something, but the idea of that drawing me in a particular way might lead to an empathetic response down the road. Because isn't art really cumulative in that sense, would you say? I mean, there's about 16 questions within that run-on sentence, just so you know. Answer any one of them.
Well, can I talk about the Global Experience Project?
Of course, yes.
Because it's a really important initiative at the school, and Isaac is our first artist engaged in this project, and it builds on something that was the Nomadic Residency Project, where artists would come in for a week or two, and they would approach the kind of nature of the way that art is displaced in the world and global, and that there's these questions that are outside of the sort of formal practices of art making that needed to be integrated. So the Weinbaum Family Foundation supported that, still does. And then they expanded the relationship with the school to say, well, let's do something at a whole other level, which is to bring in, you know, one of the world's current leading artists, so one of the people who are within that spectrum, and an artist who is really thinking about the nature of global life and experience and challenges and questions in the 21st century, and who has managed to do that at the level of, you know, both content but form as well. And, you know, it's something I spoke to earlier, which is the really pressing need for us in an area of, in a world of what I would describe new materialities of the digital, where so much is ephemeral, so much is fast, so much is happening to us, to be able to frame art practices in ways that are really able to manage that complexity and also are meaningful and have emotional impact. And that some of the ways that, you know, reductionist strategies don't necessarily work well.
Nice.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they're very important. So an artist like Isaac, who, you know, has this rich history of practices, started with the Sankofa Collective, years of his own work, was the central artist at the Venice Biennale, by the way, 2 years ago, you know, kicking off and framing the discourse at Venice, you know, who has that capacity to ask questions and do, but do it in a way where, remember, this is in part to address students.
Sure.
As well as have an Ontario.
Putting young contemporary artists on the map. That's kind of the line connected to this whole Global Experience Project. Could you get a little more practical about it, and how many students? I mean, are we talking about a formal sort of mentoring process?
Yeah.
You know, mentorship is fascinating to me, especially when talking about the arts. How do you mentor an artist, right?
Well, I have to say that one student yesterday made a remarkable work in progress. She's from Hong Kong originally, and the work that she made was the kind of work that I think we all gasped, because it was a young woman's response to the way in which the West has permeated the whole kind of image landscape through advertising with brands in such an incredibly dominant manner that, I mean, I think for young women from this part of the world, it must be impossible to imagine yourself without a Chanel bag of several chain tea. And she made this wonderful work, which was really a work which was looking at what it feels like to be a young woman in this part of the world with this onslaught of brand placement. And it was a beautiful piece. And I think it's so exciting to see that and to be able to, in a way, slightly guide where this work could go and where it could develop, and to give the possibility for certain aesthetic nuances to be developed that would better that piece in some way. And so I have to say it was astonishing.
So at that point, your role is to as the expert or as the mentor is to ask new questions, ask different questions, gently guide, affirm, I would imagine, and build a really, I would imagine, pretty positive space to create.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, there's always something that you learn, you know, when you're doing something like this. And it's really this opportunity to experience things from a young person's point of view than yourself in relationship to how they're responding to the world.
I've always been fascinated, Isaac, by the experience of art, the installation piece of the architecture of OCAD as it expands out into Toronto. The idea of this young woman from Hong Kong, the artful experience that she's going through, right? These epiphantic moments, these discoveries, and then she's going to present it to the world. I mean, to me, that's really quite nuanced and remarkable. Speaking of porous.
No, it's incredible. And it's fantastic to be able to link what she's doing to sort of analog technologies like film, connect it to filmmakers like the late Chantal Ackerman, her wonderful film, News from Home, the form of letters to her mother, and this young woman, student now, who's making a work based on letters to her mother, just to make those connections. But then just the way, in a technological sense, an aesthetic sense, the way she's developing that, and to be able to bring a point of view where you can help nurture those perspectives, it's really fantastic.
So one of the criteria for the Global Experience Project is that the artists that we choose need to have significant teaching experience, mentorship experience, and, you know, Isaac has been the chair of global art at the University of the Arts London. It's one of the most prestigious art institutions in the world. I mean, you have extensive mentorship and teaching experience. So the ability to ensure that the global fellows, because the students compete for a fellowship, and there will be 10 fellows going forward who work with each artist. And, you know, they're creating artworks. There's a studio critique opportunity. Our curatorial program also worked on the installation with the ROM. So these institutional partnerships for us are really exciting with this program, opportunities to have exhibitions for artists, etc., as we plan forward. And then the students will return to London with Isaac, and they will spend some time with you in your studio and exploring the city, which I've had the pleasure of doing with Isaac.
Isaac, in the studio or in the pub? I mean, let's be clear.
Or in the club.
Yes, yeah, yes.
Maybe the club.
The club.
Okay. Just wanted to get that out on the table, all right, before we move on.
Yeah. So this is, a very special opportunity for students, and it's not driven by... their ability to be a fellow is really, it's a meritocracy. It's driven by their ability to be successful in entering that program because thanks to the Weinbaum Foundation, there's support for the students to participate in, and of course for the artists. So I think we're creating a new kind of framework for what that global practice and dialogue can be. And when you think about the distribution of the young women's work that you're speaking about, like, is that a Canadian audience? Is that a audience
right.
in Hong Kong? I mean, you know, it's again, is that a YouTube channel? So there's so many opportunities to think about where that work can make a meaningful intervention. Is it a billboard intervention, you know, in Hong Kong, given, you know, the kind of regime of dominant images? So I think that's part of the desire with the program as well, is to think about, you know, how does work circulate in the 21st century, and what are the opportunities?
Well, OCAD's going global, clearly, but I guess art, in a sense, has gone global to some degree, hasn't it? And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, Isaac.
Well, absolutely, because one of the things we're doing is also bringing the students to Venice, and that coincides with a presentation I'm going to be doing in Venice. And also, when they come to London, I have an exhibition that's on at the same time at Victoria Mirror Gallery. So I think there's a way of connecting globally, but also I think for young students these days, it's really important for them to also have the experience of being able to see what are the different aesthetic strategies and practices which are taking place on the global stage, because we're dealing really with students who look at everything on the internet, But there's nothing better than being face-to-face with the work. And that experience, being face-to-face with work, is very, very important, especially thinking about the presentational aspects and the many platforms, I think, that students these days want to show on. So, you know, it could be on the internet, it could be kind of on Facebook. I mean, it could be on so many different platforms. And the gallery museum, in a sense, is just one space, but there are lots of different approaches that they need to have a sort of familiarity with.
I find it interesting that you feel like that the face-to-face is better, the in-person. So an online exhibition for you might not be quite as meaningful for a person. Is that what I heard you said? Jean Baudrillard, the French philosopher, you know, he would talk about, you know, this idea of the simulacra, the hyper-reality. So if you take a picture of a picture, it's just a simulation of a simulation, right? And you're losing that sense of, I don't know, the tangible sense of the piece or the engagement. But I think I heard that global experience is way more, I guess, inclusive, right, than that. I guess the other thought I had is, you know, an online exhibition has kind of an oxymoronic edge to it. You know, an exhibition usually means you walk through and you take your time and you stand in front of, and right, we're back to painting.
Well,
right?
Yes, to a certain extent. But I think, in a way, it's not an either or, really, I think, for a younger generation. I really think they're thinking about multiple platforms and the advantage to all the different ways. And I think, yes, I mean, I think, you know, we were talking yesterday about students making multiple screen works or a single screen version of a work. It could show in a film festival context, it could show in a museum context, gallery context, or it could show on the internet. And so I think they're not differentiating in the way that we might in an older generation have differentiated.
There's also, you know, there's a really important history of artists' work on the internet in that space and, you know, beginning 20 years ago, and a lot of those were, you know, interventions and ways of creating glitches within our expectations of online work, and it's become, I think, a very sophisticated space of practice that's trying to, I'm trying to not make this overly theoretical, but trying to look at the internet as a material space that has real effects and impacts on our lives. So there is a generation of artists who have contained their performance art solely to the internet to try and, you know, look at, like, what is the content of performance on the internet? I mean, it's all kinds of, you know, pushed media, it's pornography, it's et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's actually a very important space for artwork not only to be marketed or represented from its other forms, which is a bit of what we were talking about before, but actually a space of very meaningful engagement and interruption by artists.
Nice. And way too early to tell yet how it's really going to tease out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many opportunities here, and the technology is changing all the time, and the opportunity, I would imagine, and the platform and the space itself, I would think, is really probably going to be in a constant state of flux, I suppose.
The software I developed was an artwork.
Right.
It was called Code Zebra, and it had different iterations, and it was an online space that allowed discourse to be represented through effective, i.e. emotional analytics of chat, and then with this whole set of images and almost characters that emerged through that, and then it was connected to performance and wearable technologies and all of that. But that was very much in that era of the 90s and turn of the century, of really thinking about, you know, how can we make the internet a different kind of space? And it's been, you know, highly commercialized, you know, since that time. But I think artists are still very activist within that context and need to be within virtual reality, within gaming, within... So there's a whole set of practices in that emerging world that are, you know, I think particularly attractive to maybe this generation of artists. And I think what's exciting about having Isaac here is also in some ways pulling them out of that space, you know, into the really amazing power of materiality and large screen, very, very powerful projected artwork where you're really enveloped by the work at the ROM. It's stunningly beautiful installation, and you sit and you spend the time, and you want to spend the time. I've been back there a number of times and observed the audiences, and, you know, there's kids there just entranced, and very, you know, culturally diverse families. And so there is a kind of power to the immediacy, but it's not something you can touch. I mean, these are screens
right.
we're talking about, right?
Right, right. Isaac, tell us a little bit about the installation. It's at the ROM. Going to be here till the, I believe, we'll be able to check online for the dates exactly, but can you tell us a little bit more about it? You sound to me like the type of artist who takes on some pretty serious issues.
Yes, I mean, in a way, I think, connected obviously to my own background, because I come from a background where my parents migrated to England. In a way, these questions around migration are quite, in a way, felt. And so it's really trying to think about a way of making these questions become, as I said, more emphatic, or people can feel more empathy towards these questions, but at the same time, utilizing technologies to try to create that kind of identification. And so the use of multiple screens is really a practice that grew out of filmmaking. And at the same time, in the work, I was very interested in trying to utilize these different approaches. So the question of choreography, of dance, of the relationship to looking at architectural spaces, locations that create a way of trying to think through these questions in a different manner from the ways they're ordinarily presented in the media. And so for me, it's been very important to try to create these new ways of identification to these questions, because I'm at the moment facing the fact that England is leaving Europe. Brexit came about because of people's relationships to these questions around migration, in fact. And so we can see this retrogressive step back at a point where really we should be looking outwards, you know, into the world, instead of stepping back and moving inwards into one's sense of identity. And so it's really very important, I think.
We do seem to be building boundaries and not breaking them down currently, pretty much worldwide on some levels. And yet, I think maybe, I don't know if you'd agree, but isn't that where maybe the internet, the digital online exhibition, the all of a sudden you've got this digital opportunity that you I mean, I do a lot of international development work in Southeast Asia. I mean, you can go into a rural community in Cambodia, in on the Thai border, and somebody could be enjoying one of your pieces in a different way, of course, but still having access to something that, you know, who would have dreamed, you know, 10 years ago that this could be possible.
Well, it's one of those, you know, the complexities of our time is about the kind of penetration of global brand culture and mass culture, and at the same, and how that does transform the local, but also the incredible value and resonance of specific lived experience and locality, and how those pieces play out, you know, as culture emerges. I mean, I think one of the things that Isaac does that's very important is allow us to reinterpret histories as they've been given us. So, you know, looking at the discovery of the Arctic through the eyes of a Black explorer who was marginalized from history and yet played a very important role, allows a whole other point of entry into how that history has been written. And again, in, you know, what we are teaching at OCAD University, we're in a process of really looking at the truth and reconciliation process in Canada, and Indigenous culture, right. language, experience, and how
you don't get much more important than that.
How stories, you know, can be stories of multiplicity, and how these can be rethought and retold, you know, from the perspective of Indigenous peoples, worldviews constructed by Indigenous languages, because language is so determinant in how we understand culture and ideas. So that's a very important component, and that requires the willingness to step back and, you know, rethink, you know, how our history is made. And that takes me back. I mean, part of why I've always loved Isaac's work is, you know, I come out of that history of being a social historian and understanding that ideas are constructs, technologies are constructs, things are not, they're not neutral. You know, they come out of the ways that realities get produced by people and conditions and circumstances. So, and those interpretations and readings can can change and be transformed in significant ways and also become relevant. You know, things that are of the past retrieve a kind of relevance sometimes, and it's important to look at that again.
I hate the fact that we've got to end this interview in a couple of minutes, and I'm hoping that maybe we can do a part two. And I'm also wondering, probably the most important question here today, Isaac, is are you willing to take on any new students? Because you've won me over here in 35 minutes or less.
Can I just say, I really encourage people to, of course, see Isaac's work. Also, our GradX, which is our annual student exhibition, opens on May the 3rd, 100 Great. McCall, etc. And if you want to see the next generation of Oakhead nice. University talent across art, design, digital, all kinds of great work, it's a great opportunity for people in the GDA to come and see.
What a delight meeting you both. I can't believe that we've had this kind of a conversation before 11 a.m. in the morning. I mean, how amazing is that?
Well, it's fantastic. I can listen to Sarah Waddell, of course. And it's fantastic to be reunited in this way. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for your time today, Dr. Sarah Diamond and Isaac Julian here at OCAD in Toronto. Please check out the ROM. It's Isaac's work, and online, OCAD University. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Isaac.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.